greet each one in Jesus' name this morning. It has been good to be here, a blessing to, we've been blessed with a beautiful week and a beautiful Lord's Day, a day to gather together and celebrate what He has done for us. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. I am the Lord, I change not. For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. Neither is there any creature that is not manifest in His sight, but all things are naked and open unto the eyes of Him with whom we have to do. You know, those are all very familiar verses. They're words that bring comfort and hope to the believer. You know, we heard about words a couple Sundays ago. The word. You know, at the same time, they can bring feelings of fear, even terror, to the one that is taking his own way, refusing to submit to the authorities that God has placed in his life. And this morning, I'd like to look at a couple parables that Jesus gave. They're given in Luke chapter 18. And the question to each of us this morning is, what do I believe? Where am I putting my confidence? Do I have faith? And faith in what? Shall he find faith? It's what I've titled the message this morning. We have the parable of the unrighteous judge and the parable of the publican and the Pharisee. We think of faith. What does that mean to you? How do you look at it? Do you have faith in what? You know, there is the COVID-19 that we're all very much aware of, and we have people that have been seriously affected by that. And in the aspect of not, maybe almost struggling with their faith, and it's very unfortunate. And what I want to bring out in this is I believe there's times when we can't, that's where we need each other. That's where we need brotherhood to help us through those tough times. But we think of faith. You know, what do we have faith in? Charles Blondin was a famous tightrope walker before any of our time here. But some of you probably read the story. But can you imagine a tightrope stretched over a quarter mile spanning the breadth of the Niagara Falls? The thundering sound of the pounding water, drowning out all the other sounds as you watch a man step out on a rope that stretched across there, 160 feet above that water, and walk across that rope. He walked 160 feet above the falls several times back and forth between Canada and the U.S. as large crowds watched and looked on with shock and awe. Once he crossed in his sack, once he crossed on stilts, another time on a bicycle, and once he even carried his stove and cooked an omelette on his way across. On July 15th of that year, 1859, he walked backward across the rope and returned pushing a wheelbarrow. The story is told that after pushing the wheelbarrow across while blindfolded, that Blondin asked for some participation. The crowd had watched, awed and awed. He had proven that he could do it. There was no doubt. But now he was asking for a volunteer to get in that wheelbarrow and take a ride across there. It said he asked his audience, "Do you believe I can carry a person across in this wheelbarrow?" Of course, they shouted, "Yes, they believed." But did they really believe? When he asked, who will get in the wheelbarrow? There was no one out of that crowd that came up. Later in August of that same year, his manager, Harry Colcord, did ride on Blondin's back across the falls. Luke chapter 18. We'll read that first parable there. And he spake a parable unto them to this end, that men ought always to pray and not to faint, saying, there was in the city a judge which feared not God, neither regarded man, and there was a widow in that city. And she came unto him, saying, avenge me of mine adversary. And he would not for a while. But afterward he said within himself, though I fear not God, nor regard man, yet because this widow troubleth me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me. And the Lord said, hear what the unjust judge saith. And shall not God avenge his own elect, which cry day and night unto him, though he bear long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth? The parable and this parable and the next of the Pharisee and the publican are the only two recorded parables that Christ gave, that the reason was given for them before the parable was shared, or before we have it recorded anyway. It's an interesting fact. I don't know that it holds any, how important it is, but it is. These are the only two. But in this parable we just read, Jesus gave the instruction that men ought always to pray and not to faint. So prayer is the focus in both of these parables. The one that we just read shows us the attitude of God towards human prayer. He spake a parable unto them unto this end, that men ought always to pray and not to faint. In the previous chapter, if we go back, he's talking about the consummation of judgment, what things will be like when he returns for his bride. We heard a lot about that last Sunday. Things will be going on like normal, it says, as it was in the day of Noah. So shall it be in the day of the Son of Man when he comes. They will be eating, drinking, marrying, buying and selling, planting, building. Doesn't that sound like today? Until the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came. I think I said Lot there. It also says in the days of Lot, it was the same. Life went on as normal. Sodom. Life went on as normal until Sodom was destroyed. You know, many didn't recognize him when he came the first time. But, you know, when he comes again, there will be no doubt. No question. Everybody will believe. Every knee will bow. But it will be too late to change your destiny. And I believe in the light of his imminent return, he gives this parable of the unrighteous judge. Men ought always to pray and not to faint. There's a quote by Morgan that says, if as Christians we are having an easy time and enjoying life, we are poor Christians. The Christian life has always been lived in the presence of gigantic forces opposed to it and to Christ and to God. Life goes on and so it will. End of quote. He is saying, that is the way it has been. That's the way it will be. And you know, as we ponder the landscape, the godlessness, the perverseness, how do we go on? Pray and not faint. Finally, we have two options there, pray or faint, if we turn that around. We can faint. We can throw up our hands, give up. Or we can pray. Men ought. That ought, I believe, would be bringing something out to the effect that we owe. We are in debt. As his disciples, we owe that, since these conditions will prevail till he returns. As we look at the picture of the story that would have made sense to his listeners, it starts out with a judge. During this time, the area was largely under the jurisdiction of Herod, a reign of injustice and wrong, terror and oppression. And most likely, this was a story that could have easily happened with one of the judges that Herod had appointed, not a judge that you could expect justice from. The woman in this story came to him and said, avenge me, or meaning she says, I want justice. She was asking for something that this judge was supposed to be there to do, to give justice, to bring justice. Let's look at what Jesus said about him, talking about the judge. He feared not God, neither regarded man. He was not religious, nor was he humanitarian. He wasn't going to be affected by the needs of those around him, by the authorities that were over him. He disregarded the Ten Commandments, the first part of the commandments that talk about the relationship, our relationship to God. The last ones are a relationship with our fellow man. That was out. He didn't care. He did what he wanted in his own way, in his own time. He did not love, fear, or care about God or man, it says. This is the picture Jesus gave of this judge. Then we have a picture of the widow seeking justice. She had been wronged by someone. We don't have the background or the rest of the story. But she had an adversary. She was asking for simple justice. She was pleading with the one who was there, who was appointed to give justice, to bring justice. She just wanted justice, nothing else. The judge paid no attention for a while. How long this might have been, we don't know. You know, was it a month? Was it a year? But it was for a time. But finally he did it. He granted her justice in the situation that she was bringing to him. And notice how he stated his own position. Though I fear not God, nor regard man, he affirmed what was said about him. He affirmed his position. He didn't care about what God thought or care about the situation that this woman was found herself in. Indifferent. Why did he grant her request and bring justice to this situation? All he cared about was himself. But he didn't want to be troubled. She was causing him personal inconvenience, and he was afraid it would continue or get worse. So, get the problem out of the way. What was Jesus trying to show them? The difference between actions of the judge and the actions of our loving Lord. Marcus shared in the devotional some comments there about who God is, his care, his compassion. You know, all the judge was, God is not. All God is, the judge was not. Whenever self is the inspiration, life is lived on a low level. Just read the news. Read the things that are going on around. Life lived for self finally leads to depravity. No care for God. No care for fellow men. No sense of God. This was the judge. God, on the other hand, is exactly opposite. He is bound by who he is. He is truth. He is holy, just. God cannot be unjust because of who he is. He is sensitive to the needs of humanity. He is the creator. He cares for mankind. We heard some verses read out of Genesis that showed what he did, how he cared, what he wants. What he created us for. He loves to give good gifts to his people. The unrighteous judge, on the other hand, is indifferent, delayed for his response. When he finally acted, it was simply in order to escape personal suffering and annoyance. You know, God will do justice to his own elect, which cry to him day and night. Which means the continuity of necessity through the ages. You know, he will avenge them speedily, it says. Christ is saying we ought always to pray. And when we pray, there is no need for us to keep on as though God were unwilling to listen. He is always listening. We can have that confidence. He is never reluctant. He is faithful. We can trust him. We can trust to get in his wheelbarrow, if you want to put it that way. There's no need to persuade him. It comes down to an attitude of life, to always pray. Pray without ceasing. We have in the New Testament, in Philippians, I believe it is. Could be wrong on that. But we know that verse in the New Testament, pray without ceasing. An attitude of prayer, a life characterized by prayerful attitude, a life content with the will of God. Discontented with everything that contradicts his will. Carried by a supernatural strength that comes from a life committed to the righteous judge. Howbeit, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith? You know, things are going to be going on like normal, like we heard last Sunday. The things that most of us here have experienced in our lifetime isn't really the norm for the world, for the biggest percentage of people. But despite all the turmoil, we can pray and not faint as we are called to do. Shall he find faith? Let's go on and read the next parable, if you want, verse 9. And he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee, the other a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee that I'm not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess. And the publican, standing afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For every one that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. So here we have another parable that speaks about prayer. The previous parable brought out the attitude of God towards, that God has towards human, or our prayers. The one I just read makes a comparison of the different attitudes of man in prayer. We see the human nature in the attitudes or activities of prayer in the presence of God. He starts out by giving the reason for sharing this parable with this group. There were those that felt they were righteous, and they despised others. Another version says that they set others at naught. They, notice that pronoun, they trusted in themselves. They despised or set others at naught. Matthew 5:20 says, except your righteousness exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. This Pharisee's righteousness consisted in his devotion to certain laws and interpretations of the laws, and in those days to the traditions in which those laws had been almost submerged. And I believe Jesus had those people's personal attitudes in focus when he spoke this parable. They were trusting in themselves that they were righteous. They were the elite group, and everyone else was out there. They were outside. Luke specifically said there in verse 9, he says that this was the attitude that was being addressed. He spake unto certain of which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Jesus stood there. He brought up this familiar scene. So we have two men in the temple, two men that came to pray. Maybe they didn't even look very different from each other. I don't know. Jesus has quoted Isaiah's words. He said, my house shall be called a house of prayer. So that's where they were coming. They were coming to the house to pray. So two men are here, seen going to the right place. The place that was known to be the place to go to pray. They were both recognizing it as a house of God. The place set apart as a place to worship. They were both standing in the temple. They both began their prayers by addressing God. But then we begin to see the difference. The Pharisee, it says, stood and prayed thus with himself. And I don't know, you know, I can only, whatever his posture was, it was a posture of pride, arrogance, look who I am. And even though he began by addressing God, at least using the name God at the beginning of this prayer, their focus was on himself or I. That was where the emphasis was. God, he knew who that was. It was a house of prayer. He was in a place where you came to speak to God. Where did he stand? We don't know. We don't have that specifically, but I think we can gather by implication of Luke's description of the publican that he was standing afar off. I think we could safely say that he was standing in the foreground, the place where he'd be the most noticed, maybe as close to the altar as he could get. Stood and prayed versus standing afar off. What a different picture we get in their posture. Isaiah 57:15 says, "For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in the high and holy place, with him also that is of a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the spirit of the contrite ones." There was nothing wrong with what they were doing. They both came to the temple to pray, but the words "prayed thus with himself" tells us how high his prayers went. He felt himself superior to those around him. He not only separated himself from those around him, I would guess he also didn't want to be touched. He didn't want his clothes to be defiled by those he set at naught or despised. He separated himself from God in the same because of that. His prayers only went as far as his voice carried, you might say, if it went that far. He was in a circle, and he was in the center of that circle. Does that sound familiar? You know, when I hear statements like, "I'm the only one serving the Lord," or "I don't feel there are many Christians there," or the implication would be that I have attained somewhere, all those out there, you know, we've really got questions about. They're better than those around them. That was a Pharisee's attitude. "God, I thank thee that I'm not as other men are. I am no extortioner." You know, we could go up here and put, you know, he had five boxes here. You know, I'm not, so if you write extortioner over here, and I think we should think about ourselves. What do we put there? What things do we put there that we go, "I am no extortioner," he says. And after that he says, "Unjust. I'm not unjust. I'm not an adulterer." Or even as this publican. They checked off all the boxes. You know, all those things, he shouldn't have. There was nothing wrong. I mean, it would have been wrong for him to be doing these things, to be unjust, to be an extortioner, to be an adulterer. In his tithing, he said, you know, he checked that off too. He said, even, you know, I don't just tithe of the money I make this week, but I tithe of everything I've got. His fasting, you know, I don't just fast once in the week. I fast twice in the week. He's over and above everywhere. He felt superior to those around him. Why did he need to tell God all those things? Why did he need to say them out loud? You think God didn't know he had abstained from all those things? It seems like he was trying to pull God into his circle, He wanted God, be sure that God was aware of his, the life he lived. Into the circle, he was trying to pull him into the circle of his own self-centered personality. Now let's look at the other man. The man the Pharisee referred to in his prayer. We see God's perspective. This is the man that was standing afar off, over in a corner somewhere. He may have come in quietly with not trying to make sure everybody knew that he was there. Head bowed, a heart longing to talk to God. It says he smote upon his breast, which would mean an act of confession. He started out addressing God, just like the other one, his first word, God. But that's where it changed. The other ones, the Pharisees, was full of I. For him it was a simple me. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Only 7 words. Again, he was in a circle. There were 2 personalities in that circle, and that was God and me, a sinning or sinful man. In all the vastness of eternity, his cry was a real one. His prayers went to God. He met the description that Isaiah gave there. For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place with him also that is of a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. He didn't have any boxes that he needed to check off and make sure that God knew what he had done. What was his concept of God? What was the publican's concept of God? Wouldn't we conclude that it was God was one that he could come to? God was a compassionate God, one that a sinner could come to and plead for mercy. We see 2 striking contrasts of their concept of God, how they viewed God. They started out with the same address, God, but with very different concepts. The God of the Pharisee is one that is satisfied with works. And the one that owes something. Or has a sense of duty to man because of all that man has done. Because of all that he has abstained from and all the rites and ceremonies he has kept. The other has the concept of God as one who is holy, in whose presence a sinful man needs mercy, but one to whom he can come with downcast eyes, beating on his breast, pleading for mercy. What a picture. You know, it doesn't end there, the passage. We have God's final word for these men in verse 14. He says, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified. He doesn't stop there. He says, rather than the other. Romans 5:1 says, therefore, being justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom also we have access by faith into this grace wherein we stand and rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. Shall he find faith? You know, this is a parable, but it was about, I think, real life situations they were facing. It was speaking to a need in their day, and it is applicable to us today. You know, Jesus summed it up in those last words. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. Let's turn our church hymnals to 459. Mark, if you're back, it's not here. Is there a song leader here? I guess I'm not laying. If you are, does somebody have a pitch pipe? Nobody? Okay. Well, I'll try to lead. Why don't we all stand together and sing the chorus with the first and last verse?
Would men have been with Jesus? Can they feel his presence near? As with him you joy and labor, as with them you journey. Much as unto others ye have done these things, said he, unto me ye did the service. Witness that all men may see. Can men tell that you love Jesus?
Seated. The question I'd like to leave, where are we when we come to the house of God and pray? You know, something I can't answer for you, I can answer that for myself, I believe. But everyone's going to have to give an account, and everyone, I believe, in their heart knows where you are when you come to the house of God to pray. I'm not talking about the church house, our place of worship. That's part of it. But I think it's our daily walk of life, like we just sang about. Can men tell that you love Jesus by your life? You know, that's where we need, I believe, as a child of God, we want and we need the brotherhood. We need to be faithful in prayer and not fainting. Shall he find faith when he comes? You know, are you willing to say, Lord, I trust you to guide me, to go where he takes you? You know, you wouldn't have caught me getting in the wheelbarrow, because you never know when Blondin will let you down. But that's not the way it is for God. He's faithful. We can trust him. We can know that he is in control, that he wants our best. Sometimes that's not easy to just say, Lord, here it is, and take the path. I'm willing to take the path that you want for me. Let's kneel for prayer.